Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I tell the stories of art, artists, and interview people in the arts. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I am an artist, art historian, teacher, and mentor. So this is episode 88 of Art Talk. And after a long hiatus, I'm back with my first guest, Aniko Boda. Aniko Boda is a painter of imaginary realism. She's a thinker and a storyteller. She initially studied medicine before she dived into art and studied in New York, the Art Student League, the School of Visual Arts, then the Hungarian Academy of Fine Arts, Master, and finally in Schott Studio. So welcome, Aniko. What a pleasure to finally have you as my guest.
Thank you for having me, Karin. It's so great to talk to you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I went through your site. I looked in what you do, and it's amazing stuff you paint. You studied art for 15 years. That is honing your skills.
Let's say 10. I think 15. Okay, I studied art all of my life. But academically about 10 years.
Yeah. And do you still hone your skills every day?
Well, of course. I teach myself. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no such thing like, okay, so what I tell my students, I don't teach how to paint a horse. I don't teach how to paint a flower. There is no such thing. They ask me, oh, please, teach me how to paint a husky dog, for example. I want them to understand that it's not possible to teach every single object how to paint, mm-hmm. but you have to learn to see, then you can paint everything. But in case of a realist painter, in our life, with every new painting, there is always something new we have to experiment about the painting techniques of. And I have to figure out if I encounter something I haven't painted before, how to represent it. Yeah. And you know what? I still keep asking people that, do you know what is this special thing in the painting? I show them that part because I know what I wanted to paint, but that's my side and I'm not sure mm-hmm. that the viewer can identify correctly what I wanted to put in the painting.
Is that important for you?
It is important because clear communication is very important for me. That's why I paint my works, to communicate mm-hmm. with the viewer.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And I really love what you say. I can't teach you how to paint a flower or a horse. I can only teach you how to see. Observation is key, isn't it?
Sure. That's. I always tell everybody that I don't paint a horse. I don't paint a house, a person or something. I paint the horsiness of all horses. Mm-hmm. The strength of the horse, the speed, the beauty, the lines of their body. So the horse I paint has to express all the best qualities of all the horses living on earth. So we always express generalized ideas. Okay, they also have specific attributes like the color and how long their legs are, for example. So it doesn't mean that if I do portraiture, you cannot identify the sitters. Of course you can, because mm-hmm. that's also important. But mm-hmm. I try to grab qualities which belong to the general aspect, for example, all the copper dishes. So I don't know how to express it more clearly, but I think really good realist painters, they don't stick to certain tiny details and everything of the real object in front of them, but they can paint many, many things. Most of the object can be painted by heart, because you know how, for example, a metal, an iron, or a wood, or something, leather, hair, fur, anything, any kind of object should look. And you can a little bit personify it, that general idea. And that's how you get that specific thing you have to paint in that given painting.
Yeah, exactly. You say that's so beautiful. Because when you do portraits too. And you do portrait commissions. Yeah. And people want to be in that portrait. Otherwise, they wouldn't commission you. I don't know if you relate to this, but I always tap into their energy. So I can paint their story, something that they don't see within themselves, but I can see it.
In my case, it normally works the other way around. But it was really strange for me. I never wanted to be a portrait artist, but...
That's interesting.
I wanted to tell stories. I didn't want to paint portraits, people's portraits. But after the initial phase of being exhibited in art fairs and stuff, people went into my gallery and they asked if they could be in my paintings. So people are attracted to the atmosphere, the paintings, the stories so much that I had to paint many versions of my own work, and just with other faces. So I asked them to photograph themselves with in the same poses, like I used in the original work, and I adjusted the size of the work to the given space I was asked. And so those are not really portraits, but more like figurative works with commissioned faces.
Interesting. Really interesting.
You cannot see them on my homepage because I don't consider them as separate works. They are part of series.
Okay, yeah. You say just, you know, I wanted to paint stories, and you paint stories, and they are really complex too. Because when you look at them the first time, you think like, oh my god, I have to. There's so much in this. What made you express yourself this way?
I'm a philosopher. First and foremost, I think all the time. Sometimes I even overanalyze things in my private life. It's, you know, it, what's my advantage is also my drawback. And it's a very complicated kind of lifestyle. I did not choose it for myself. I was born like that. I describe myself as a kind of relay, radio relay, or I'm like a sign receiver working on two legs. I collect impressions from everywhere, all the time, even from my dreams. So I keep working on my paintings 24/7, really. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I I don't sketch, I write down mm-hmm. the stories mm-hmm. I dreamt about, and I always think them through again, and oh, I realize that this thought is connected to another one, and also there's a consequence, and it all these stories at the end become like an epic novel, like a really, really long novel, like War and Peace, for example, or Karamazov Brothers, or, you know, these classic novels.
Yeah.
And since I work on a piece for weeks, for months, for 2 months, I really have time to finish my own book. Sometimes, you know, the paintings tell me what to do. They develop themselves, because I always have 2 seeds. I call them seeds of paintings. Mm-hmm. One is a theoretical seed. I know I have a problem of philosophical issue, for example, I want to talk about, but I also have a central visual motif, which is gonna be the focus of the painting, and I built all the visual clothes around that central seed. When I start the painting, I'm not 100% sure what I want to include in. More, I know what I don't want.
But that's always the case. People always know better what they don't want than what they want, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And I don't bother so much about the exact setup of the final painting, because, you know, I try to explain people the way I think, not just me, but every artist, how we work. Like, it's exactly like visiting a foreign city. For example, I've never been to Rome, and I decide I want to visit Rome, and I start to gather information about Rome. I check the Google Maps, I ask other people who have already been to Rome, and I do the booking.com job and everything. I prepare myself with as much information as I can. But I still don't know how Rome looks like. I know how Rome looks like when I get there. So even I'm so much surprised at the end how my picture turns out. And you know what? These weeks and months, they just fly away, because I'm so excited that how my work will turn out. So it's like being living in the flow.
Yeah, and it sounds like, well, I wanted to ask you a bit about your thought process. You already told us now, but it also sounds like you are on a journey yourself whilst painting.
Yeah.
And then it is exciting, because in a way you're on a journey where you have an idea somewhere there. For you it's clear, but visually you're still working towards that and you want to go there. So it's exciting. It's like you walking towards Rome in this instance. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, now I found it there. That's where I want to go. I take my backpack and I walk towards it. You paint mm-hmm. towards it. Yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like that.
Yeah, it's amazing, because your paintings are complex and I love to look at it and to watch them. You also are, you paint in the old master style, especially mm-hmm. with your old pen. What is your biggest inspiration from the old masters? Who is?
I started out with Rembrandt, of course, when I was very young, as everybody else. Then Rembrandt was followed by Odd Nerdrum, of course. you know, I don't know if you know him, Norwegian contemporary painter, Odd Nerdrum. Basically, I think the whole contemporary realism, I mean the big peak of abstraction, we all came out of his heritage. He's still alive anyway, so he's 80 something now.
Yeah. Nice. Has he seen your work?
I don't think so.
Oh, you don't have contact with him. You don't have the feeling like, well,
No.
No?
Actually, he has a school in Norway, but I didn't dare to go there because his effect is so big on me that I was afraid of losing myself.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, I don't know if you ever had this feeling with someone who is such a big personality and you love their work so much. And you know what? It's not a fear without base, because there is a group of artists who are called Nerdrumeski, means followers of Nerdrum.
Okay, yeah.
And it's coming from the Italian version. But their work looks exactly like their master's work. I don't like this idea. I don't think that you should teach people. Even, you know, he has to establish Odd Nerdrum Institute, and the institute's main task is to tell the originals from the followers' work, because now there are so many followers worldwide that collectors are not sure that who is really the author of the work.
Oh God, yeah, that is a problem, I think. It's the teacher who is teaching his students how they have to paint like him.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think you're a good teacher when you do that, to be honest.
I agree.
maybe that's a bit harsh to say, but I think it's an ego problem you have when you do that. If you're a good teacher, you teach, you inspire people to become their authentic selves. You teach them how to use oil paint so that it doesn't fall off the canvas after 5-6 years, or how they can paint in a way that it is really three-dimensional and feels like realistic, but be yourself.
Exactly. I think that as teachers, we can teach the ABC of painting.
Yeah.
But you cannot teach people how to express themselves with their knowledge. Okay, there are basic tasks of like composition, color theory, whatever, but it's still not yet art. And without the craft part, at least with realism or imaginary realism, it's not possible to express yourself.
Exactly.
If you don't know drawing, colors, perspective, geometry.
Yeah. But that is the basic. That is the basic that people need to learn to become an artist in the first place. Yeah. I mean, that's the basic of art. And then you can learn how to express yourself, because then you have the tools to express yourself. Without the tools, you can't. But copying your master is not being an artist.
Sure.
In my perspective, at least. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But also when we teach, we should teach. Now, well, I tend to say, okay, teaching to a certain point, but then it becomes inspiring.
Yeah, I have a very nice metaphor for teaching. Mm-hmm. It means that reaching your goals in art is the same like trying to climb a very high mountain.
Yeah.
And the teacher can take you, like a horse carriage, for example, to the base camp, halfway of the mountain. And you can climb yourself to the base camp without a teacher, but you can spare so much time by learning from other people. Just you don't have to waste your time with trying to find out everything from the beginning again.
No.
Because during these centuries of art, there is a huge knowledge of the craftsmanship which was gathered, and you don't have to discover things which were known 200 years ago again for yourself, but you can learn from your teachers this stuff. So you can get halfway to the top of the mountain, to the base camp. But from the base camp, nobody on earth can help you to get to the peak, to your art.
No.
That is the part that you have to look for in yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. But then you need your imagination. And like you do, you write down your dreams. You think and you see things around you and you draw them into your stories. And then your journey begins and you keep growing on that. Yeah, it's an interesting journey. And it's interesting to talk about teaching and inspiring. What can people learn actually from your art? Do they tell you what they learn from your art when they see it? Mm-hmm. I'm curious.
I don't
about
know
that.
If I don't want to teach with my art. It's not the primary goal. I would like to call their attention to certain thoughts. These are called conversation pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It means that if you have a painting like this in your home and you have visitors, for example, everyone can have their own version of what they see. They always get the original story, of course, because I have my story.
Yeah, exactly.
But these kind of paintings have to inspire you to develop your own story according to what you see. You know, sometimes when I hear people's stories about my painting, I just keep laughing because I never ever thought such things. They explain me what they are thinking of. So it's very funny, really. But they love to know my story. And it doesn't really matter what is my story. At the end, it's like, you know, like every nation has its own folk tales.
Yeah.
And people always add little things to that tale, or they compare their tales to another nation's folk tale, because the basic motifs in the folk tales and also in religions, for example, are quite similar.
Mm.
Doesn't matter if it's South America, Africa, Asia. There are stories how the world was created, and there are repeating motifs like the huge flood which destroyed the whole world, and the world was recreated. And these kind of stories somehow are in us, inside us, and I just have to pick something which can resonate with everybody, and then they can develop their own complex stories and feelings. The strange thing with me, I've never been interested in feelings. You know, artists are most likely connected with emotionality, and we paint out of feelings, and I don't know what I've never ever seen.
Oh, that's interesting. Because yeah, I am, as you see, a realistic painter, but for me it's a lot about feelings also. I feel into the people I paint.
Sure.
I am also an art historian and philosopher. I am. But feeling is definitely part of my process. Definitely.
I don't have this part.
Oh, yeah. When I had to paint a portrait of someone who passed suddenly.
Ooh.
And he didn't want to be painted. And I could feel, because I couldn't get him on the canvas. And then I had to tap into his energy. I have to feel into it. That is how it works for me. It's so interesting. Every artist has his own process in that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But it's interesting that you say, if you look at your paintings, I feel so freaking much. And then you say, I don't have feelings about it.
No. I'm very mechanical in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
How I put my paintings together. I use the word exciting or not exciting. If something makes the painting more exciting, I include it. But if it's boring, I leave it out. That's basically this. This is not emotion. I don't think it is.
But boring can be an emotion. I mean, boring is a feeling you don't want to have. Yeah. And excitement is a feeling you have because you have feeling, but you don't think like that then, probably.
When I asked how I choose what to include in a painting,
yeah,
I answer, sorry, this won't be very nice, but my armpit tells me so. If I feel hot under my armpit, it means that it's good. I use my body to
to choose. Tell me about feeling. You definitely feel. I mean, you have a thought process and you see specific problems. And we talk about it later, the politicians, because there's so much humor in that, that too, for me, when I look at it.
Yeah, it is
humor. The title alone. But that's definitely feeling. Your body speaks to you and you feel that and you know. Then you know. So, you feel.
Thank you.
You feel.
Now you know, Karin, now I learned something from you. It's so great that I always learn. Like, it's a lifelong learning. Now I'm learning from you about myself.
Yeah, but it is, everything is a lifelong learning. And I heard someone say lately, like, especially in the world we live now with social. And you said in the beginning, I can't teach you how to paint a horse or a flower. I can teach you how to see. But that takes time.
Mm, yeah.
That takes slowing down time.
Yeah.
And social demands now, tomorrow, yesterday.
Which I will never forget that very frustrating experience. It was in New York in the art school when my teacher asked me, can't you see that light on the model? He showed me with his finger and I just didn't see anything. And I thought to myself, oh my God, it's so terrible. I'm just blind or something. I didn't see.
I had the same. I was on the academy and the professor said to me, don't paint what you don't see. Yeah, but I see it. No, you think you see it,
mm-hmm.
but you don't see it.
Yeah, exactly. So it was so frustrating that that time I thought I would never ever will make anything as an artist because I'm just blind. I see. And you know, for so many years I threw away my works. I hated them. It's the most terrible experience when you have your children and you hate them all.
And yeah, that's terrible.
You are ashamed of them and you don't want to show them to anyone for years and years on. That's why I studied for 10 years, because I've never been satisfied, never.
And yeah, but then still, you know, Annika, I'm not always satisfied. But I try to say, okay, I correct myself. You didn't look, you were not focused on what you had to see. You're focused on getting it done. And I turn it around and say, okay, quiet down now. And just look at it for 3 minutes, only at that piece for 3 minutes. Look at it and then put it down, that direction, the values, blah. And then it starts to come again. Because if we beat ourselves up, we end up throwing out everything in the bin. But we need it for our own process.
Sure. I think if someone is not willing to go through this process, then they won't make it. And you know what? How many artists I met who started abstract works because they gave up on figurative painting? You have no idea.
Oh, yeah, I have an idea. I know. I know a lot of people who do, and they say to me, I can't do that. And I say, that's not true. You can, but you have to learn to see. Observing is the most important part of the artist. Observe, mm-hmm. observe. Apart from the skills of how to use paint, how to draw, the values, the composition, etc. Learn to observe. Take your time to observe. And don't let anyone tell you that tomorrow you need to put it on social media. That's not true. Don't do it. And so, yeah, I know a lot of artists do this. And a lot of artists also say, well, if they can do this, then I can do that too. And they just throw something on the canvas and they think it is. And then you can see they don't understand composition, also in abstract work. They don't understand color. So, yeah. But let's go to this. Pro dulce of dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. You know exactly what I mean.
Yeah. And
it is from your painting, Pro Patria Mori. Let me explain. For the listeners, this is from a Roman poet, Horace, and the translation is, it's sweet and proper to die for one's country.
Yeah, it was a theory which was widely accepted till 19th century, I think,
yeah.
When, you know, history painting was in rage. And we have a magnificent work in the National Gallery here in Budapest by Gyula Bencúr. He is an academic Hungarian painter, my favorite, all-time favorite. And even internationally